Good morning, Shirley Gash. How are you?
I'm very good, thank you.
That's good. Shirley, you have had an attachment. There are many things, I guess, that make people inspirational, but you've had an attachment to Red Cross, Australian Red Cross, of course, and a number of other things during your life. Tell us a little bit about your background and what led you to be working with Red Cross and your involvement with them. And I guess it does become a spiritual thing because, of course, you're helping lots of people through your actions too.
Yes, that's true. Actually, my attachment to the Red Cross is probably mostly because of my own father.
Right.
And so he was the inspiration for me to take such an interest in the Red Cross. Okay. But as you say, I mean, I have a background of being first in business in the travel industry, but then secondly, I went on to doing full-time Christian ministry.
Yep.
And worked as a speaker and an assistant pastor for many years. And so, but those were not really the influences necessarily for me to be involved with the Red Cross. With the Red Cross, it was much more about my father and his life.
Yes.
So,
yes, your father was a medic. Your father was a medic in World War II. Tell us a little bit about that too, Shirley, if you can, and how that affected you and your family life.
Yes, sure. Yes, well, my father was a medic in World War II. In fact, he was, I don't know if many people have seen the movie Hacksaw Ridge, but he was probably a little bit of a down under Hacksaw Ridge man.
Right.
Because he didn't want to take lives. He'd become a Christian himself in his teens. And so he didn't want to take lives, but at the same time, he wanted to save lives.
Mm-hmm.
And so he volunteered to go with the Red Cross into World War II. And because he had objected to the idea of carrying a gun, he was actually put in the front lines for 4 years. So he was at El Alamein. He was in the Battle of Casino.
Wow.
And so, yes, these were two very important battles. And it took its toll on him too. I think he returned from the war in his late 20s and probably had post-traumatic stress. But back in the day, nobody really gave them any depth of counselling or anything like that. They were being told, get married, have a family, and that. Marriage was my brother, he was the oldest. And I'm not sure whether it was partly due to the trauma my father had been through or whatever else, but he was actually, today he would have been diagnosed as having low functioning autism, I would imagine.
Right.
They didn't have a name for it back then, but he was definitely a challenge. My sister came along 2 years later.
Mm-hmm.
And then 5 years later, I came into this family that was struggling very much. His demons, if you like, that had come from the war and also with what was happening in the family. And but by the time I was four, my brother actually had run away from home and was lost for a week. And so it was kind of one of those stories that you often see today that I always feel such compassion for.
Yes.
And eventually he was found. I actually grew up in New Zealand. You may be picking up a little bit of the accent here.
Just a little bit.
And he was found in one of Auckland's harbours. He was found in one of Auckland's harbours drowned. And so this created a lot more trauma for my family, of course. Mm. And my mother never really came out of that. My father tried to deal with things by probably trying to find his own peace. And that meant that he took up doing yoga and all sorts of things. Often say it was back in the day when New Zealanders would have thought that was something you ate with breakfast. But anyway, mm-hmm. but he was kind of before his time looking through these things of meditation and whatever else. He never spoke about his war years until he was much older. In fact, probably that was a good thing because I would not have appreciated it. Mm. Until I was old enough to understand what he was talking about.
Mm.
He did tell funny stories at the end of the day. He would talk about people who had you know, during the war, during the times of battle, where he'd be so exhausted and he'd find just some camp stretcher to flop out and sleep on and then wake up in the morning and discover that he was lying with all the dead. And so, you know, kind of fortunate he wasn't carted off. and he told stories about having to hold a man's leg while it was being amputated without anaesthetic.
Wow.
But he said that the worst operation he ever had to help with was somebody was having an ingrown toenail fixed. I think perhaps we relate to that kind of pain even more. So he was actually a stretcher bearer. He talked about how he would be, they were so close to the Germans during the Battle of Casino that they could actually hear them speaking and they had to whisper as they were taking men out.
Wow.
Other things he talked about was trying to stretch a bear between two tanks firing at each other at El Alamein in the desert. And he talked about scorpions going into his tent and, you know, talked about how one time his captain or whoever was over him had asked him to come and see him. And so he got out of his tent. He was in the middle of writing a letter, feeling a little annoyed that he'd been interrupted. But just as he left his tent, a screaming Mimi came down and obliterated it.
Wow.
And so all that was left of his things in the tent was a bent spoon. Oh. So, you know, these were the sorts of stories. He told a funny story about a new recruit that had turned up in the desert. And when the aircraft went over, you dived for cover wherever you could. Mm. And so this man saw two tins that were sitting there. So he put his head between these two tins to try and protect his head, but afterwards learned that those two tins were actually marking where there was a mine. And so, you know,
wow.
I don't think he was really as safe as he thought he was.
Wow.
So it was marking where somebody was going to come along and dig the mine out.
Sure.
So these were some of the stories that I heard about.
Yeah.
But he also talked about having been in the Red Cross during the time of the war.
Mm-hmm.
He grew to have such a respect for this. He said sometimes it was a sad thing that even despite the fact that it was a Red Cross, and I do have a lot of black and white photos that he brought back with him, and you know, it's really rather interesting looking back over those things and trying to imagine what he went through.
Well, maybe we could have some of those photos.
Anyway, he came home, and as I say, he had us. Yes, I'll see if I got them that I can just send on to you easily.
Mm-hmm. So, Shirley.
So, anyway, we grew up in the family, and once he got back, and you know, so I often say never ask a question. Of a preacher, I'll just keep talking.
No, that's right. I was just thinking, the bandwidth is low from your end, apparently, according to my end. So you're coming through a delay. So what we'll do, of course, this will still be in the Anzac Day edition, but if I'm coming in delay to you too, then that's the reason why, because there's some bandwidth problems at the moment. But what we'll do is we'll go on and we'll talk about also your role and how what you're doing with Red Cross and what you have done with Red Cross. So when did you first get involved with Red Cross, Shirley?
Well, as a matter of fact, that really happened probably at my father's funeral.
Right.
Well, we had a memorial service for him and he had asked if I would take it, which was, you know, a big ask, but actually I found it such an honour.
Mm.
And my father, after the war, because of his great respect for the Red Cross, he'd gone on wanting to raise funds for the Red Cross, and he was a bit of a character.
Right.
And so, you know, when my mother passed away at 84, he became very involved in trying to raise funds for the Red Cross. And what he would do, he was a musician, if you can call an accordion player a musician.
Most definitely.
He loved playing accordion music and he played Italian music that he'd learned from the war. And so he would go out to different rest homes and he would play music for the old people when he was in his 80s. He also used to go on the radio and do a little show at 2 o'clock in the morning musical memories of the 20th century. Anyway,
But
after that, he got himself a busker's license so that he could go down to the main streets in Auckland and play his piano accordion and raise funds for the Red Cross. And he would wear his army band with the Red Cross on it. And people would say, "What war were you in?" He'd say, "World War II." And so he'd been doing this for a while. And then when he got too old and just didn't feel that he could carry all this equipment with him, he found that there was a Red Cross Goodwill shop around the corner, an opportunity shop. Mm-hmm. So he went round and he volunteered to help in the shop and work there too. And so he'd always had this passion for trying to help the Red Cross. And all through my life, I had heard, "Do not forget the Red Cross. Do not forget the Red Cross." Mm-hmm. So when he had his memorial service, I invited some of them along.
Yep.
And they talked about him and talked about his involvement. And so I realized that to honor him, I needed to honor the Red Cross. Mm-hmm. And so after that, I moved to Australia and went on with Christian ministry here. But I thought, well, how can I do this? And how can I help with the Red Cross?
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought, well, like a lot of people, I'm probably asset rich and cash flow poor, yeah, because when you're trying to pay off a house. But I thought one thing I can do is I can leave a legacy to the Red Cross. Yeah. And so I decided that I would do that. And then because I'd done that, they asked me, you know, "Why are you wanting to leave this legacy?" And my story came out about my father. And so I found myself beginning to speak at different Red Cross functions and that sort of thing. So just to describe why it was important to me. It was important to me because of my faith too, because as my father said, the Red Cross was started by a Christian, and that the ethos is there where they don't discriminate. They go into every country. Mm-hmm. They look for wherever there is need, mm-hmm, and they're helping people. They're a very established organization. And so it's one of, dare I say it, the few that I would trust. And so there in my will, there is a legacy to the Red Cross.
Yes.
And now that I have been diagnosed with an acute leukemia, yeah, then that legacy may well be a little quicker coming to them. I guess I've got to wait for my husband too, but he feels the same as I do.
Yes.
And so there it is set in paper. Yes. That that's something that's very important to me.
Yes. So attached, we salute you for your service and your legacy too. When that happens, for all people will benefit. And I guess this is the idea behind the Red Cross too, Shirley. With how important is the message of the Red Cross? You must be pretty used to talking about the Red Cross, but how essential is the message of the Red Cross in today's uncertain world and a world with violence, obviously, too?
Well, I think that it's becoming more and more essential. Mm. At the moment, we're watching all the sabres being rattled in various parts of the world. And to be honest, I can see probably World War III coming up very quickly. I fear for the United States and for us here in Australia, I fear for our allies. And I fear for people in countries that are not our allies. Mm. And because there's going to be so much pain coming up. And of course, we live in a nuclear era, and we can't imagine what kind of suffering may well be ahead. So an organization like the Red Cross already has established places all over the world, and even in countries where the Red Cross itself would not be a necessary welcome symbol, they've found ways to be represented there too.
Mm-hmm.
What I like about them is that there's no discrimination. And of course, personally, in my own belief, I believe that all people were created by God in his image, and that all people need the dignity of knowing that someone could be there for them if they're going to suffer. So I think the work of the Red Cross is becoming more and more essential and in the days to come.
Yes, essential.
I hope also, that many more people do recognise it.
Yes, that's true, Shirley. Essential too, I would say, for younger generations to know the message of Red Cross. I was a junior leader with Red Cross in primary school, and on Red Cross camps, we would look after the kids that were a few years younger. But of course, we learned the message of Red Cross from a very early age, and it became a part of who I am. And because of that, we're very happy to be associated with the Red Cross and to wonderful people like yourself. What about the kids today coming up? How important is it for the children, the kids today, to also learn that message?
I think it's very important. And I have been pleased when I have been to functions that I have seen that there are young ones there. And so obviously the message is getting through to some, but I wish that it could get through to a lot more. Mm-hmm. Perhaps things like this should be part of a component of what is learnt in schools. Mm-hmm. And to just know who is out there and how to actually look for who you can trust. Mm-hmm. But also I think that the work of the Red Cross is something that can challenge and inspire young people to go and do something. Because of course, it's not just overseas, it's also locally here too, where the Red Cross do look after people who need care here as well. Mm-hmm. And so they're looking out for older people, they're looking out for people who have no families and that sort of thing. So it's not just an overseas work. Mm-hmm. And I think if younger people can get involved in that at a local level, then however they can, I'm not sure, but I'm sure the Red Cross would have open arms for anybody who would like to put in some kind of voluntary work.
Yes, indeed, Shirley, and I think that's the important thing. I know that the message will continue through generations, and I guess also the message of the Red Cross is very similar to what you preach, and also I guess the magazine, The Last Post too, Shirley, because not glorifying war, but at the same time not stepping back from looking after those that have been affected.
That's right, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing. I mean, people who go to war on either side believe that what they're doing is for their nation, you know. So I think that was part of my father's motivation, the fact that the people who were in the war were often there because they were serving their nations, not necessarily because they wanted to go and obliterate people. And in fact, it's a sad thing when we make some group of people become the enemy and we demonize them in some way or vilify them in some way so that they become non-human. And I guess in my own years I've seen that happen with all sorts of groups of people. And
yes,
you know,
what,
and
I understand what you're saying,
because if we can learn about people, if we can listen to them, if we can hear people's hearts, we'll find that we are all humans. We are all people who want to love our families. And of course, my message would have to be that we could also love our God. I mean, to me, that's my highest motivation. And in fact, in doing that, then I want to love people. You know, so it's kind of vertical and horizontal, if you like.
Yes, I understand
the two go together. And so the motivation is to try and find, well, how can we best help people? How can we best help everybody, not just those that we agree with? And if we could all do that, maybe there would be no wars. But I'm sad to say, I don't think that as long as this earth continues the way it is, that we will be free of conflict.
No.
And which means so we can never be free of people needing to help.
No, that's right. I think there will always be a place for Red Cross, and there will always be a place for people with similar views to yours, and of course what the magazine espouses too. And I think this has been the wonderful thing about speaking with you, Shirley, is the common ground that we have. And through that Red Cross, our attachment to Red Cross and your attachment to assisting human beings find some peace, and also assisting those affected by war, which Red Cross does. So we thank you very much for being an inspirational Australian woman, Shirley, even if you're born in New Zealand.
That's okay. Well, I am an Australian citizen, a dual citizen.
Oh, that's good. Cool.
So, you know, I actually wrote my father's story into a family memoir, which I put onto Amazon.
Right.
So I think probably two people have read it in the world. But it was about his year, his war years a lot and about how he refound his faith. Yeah. And
we should look out for that, Shirley. And I'll send an email and perhaps you can give me some details about how to have a look at that, because I think that's of great interest to a lot of readers also. So that would be good for your father's voice to still be heard after the years have gone by. And we will do everything we can to assist there. But thank you very much, Shirley. You're a wonderful woman. Bless you in many ways. And thank you so
much. Bless you too.
Thank you so much, Shirley. Thank you for assisting in the magazine being a better magazine by your presence.
Well, I hope it turns out well for you anyway, Greg. And thanks for the chat.